I know that that's single. Okay. Erev Tov. Good evening to all of you. One of the thousand reasons I made Aliyah was in order to be able to fulfill minimally three parshas, a commission, perhaps even a fourth, that deal with Shemitah. There are 999 other reasons. If I were to list them, you would be here for the next few weeks. So I will not trouble you unduly, but unquestionably, Shemitah is one of the most beautiful opportunities that all of us have to observe Sukkim Mechumish, that in Chutz Laaretz we don't have that opportunity to do so. Not even in Teaneck, New Jersey, or in Muncie, New York, where my Bich has a Muslim, has a Nusach, Uvnei Muncie, Yir HaKodesh, Behev Yameinu. I'm just being cute. So Baruch Hashem, the opportunity that all of us have here in Eretz Yisrael to observe Shemitah is a wondrous opportunity, one which is distinct, unusual, extraordinary. I heard from Hagon Yad Eben Sol Shlita, he told me that his Rebbe, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach Zatzal, writes that on the Kiddush, the night of Rosh Hashanah, when we say Kiddush, one should have Kavanah and the Shechiyanu for the mitzvah of Shemitah. One should have that in mind. When one says Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah night, where Shemitah actually begins. And one should feel a sense of Shevach Vodah to Hashem, praise and thanksgiving, that I'm able now to enter the new year of Shabbat Haaretz, a land that has Kedusha, and that only comes periodically every 7 years.
Just stop it, it's wrong.
They stay over from the, someone came to Kazanish and tried to convince him regarding a certain area that he should be lenient regarding the Shemitah. Then the Kazanish was very natal when he came to Shemitah. He was makbid against the Heta Mechira, but very makel on Yoni Shemitah. Rav Kook Zatzal, on the other hand, was makel on Heta Mechira and very machmir on Yoni Shemitah. So someone came to the Chazon Ish, this is all by way of preamble, for those who just appeared on the scene. So someone came to the Chazon Ish and essentially tried to convince him to be lenient regarding a certain Indian Shrias. He said that Shemitah today is only rabbinic in nature, it's not min HaTorah, there's no chiyah to be so machmir. So the Chazon Ish answered him, all Isurim, most prohibitions are rabbinic in nature. We don't find really that many Isurim in HaTorah. For example, when you sold meat, which I don't believe is done today by command anyone in this room, as far as I know. So the whole dinim of salty meat, which I learned when I learned Yerodei with Asalavetchik, so he taught the laws of Melicha. Melicha itself is certainly a din daraisa, but most Paschim assume that dam, blood, that it's in Mahushal, the congealed, there's only a din Rabbanon. Anyway, the point of the Chazon Ish was that most dinim are the Rabbanon, and we don't have the concept even of the Rabbanon. So even though Shemitah may very well be the Rabbanon, but because it's a golden opportunity for all of us here. And as I said, among the thousand reasons, this is certainly on the top of the list. What I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to try to overview two areas of Shemitah. First, an introduction, and then the specific areas I'll be discussing are questions relating to gardening. And I'm not a gardener, I'm not a farmer, far from it. And the second area will be areas that relate to issues in the kitchen. In the Torah itself, there are four prohibitions that relate to the issue of Shemitah. The Torah comments very clearly at the beginning of Parshas Bahar, and the Torah introduces the laws of Shemitah. Sadecha lo sizra, b'kamecha lo sizmar. One is not allowed to sow, to seed, to put a seed into the ground. That's called planting. B'kamecha lo sizmar refers to pruning, when you remove branches from a tree in order to stimulate growth. Those are two prohibitions from the Torah. And the Torah goes on to describe as well the Easter of Ketzira and Betzira. Ketzira refers to reaping annual crops and gathering perennial crops. So Those are the four items that I mentioned in the Chumash directly. And then there are some positive commandments as well. Besides the negative commandments, there are some positive ones, namely that the Torah says in Mishpatim, "Bashvias tishmetena unetashto." That means you have to declare the Shemitah produce ownerless. It has to be hefker. And there's also a mitzvah to preserve the sanctity of Shemitah produce. Shemitah produce has Kedusha Shvias, is invested with the sanctity of the seventh year. It can only be used for consumption. The Gemara says, La'achla below the schora, only for the purposes of being consumed, of being eaten, and not for business, commercial purposes. And there are many other such dinim as well. And there's also a din of biur, which is very relevant during different times of the year, to remove Shemitah produce from one's home when that species is no longer available in the field. So that's at a Torah level. And then rabbinically, we have many, many agricultural laborers that are forbidden, whether it's weeding, fertilizing, cutting, spraying pesticides, and the like are forbidden by rabbinic decree. However, once something is also the rabbanon, when it's rabbinically enjoined, then there are a lot of leniencies that can be applied in case of financial loss. So just to give one or two examples that are relevant, this is by way of introduction to the topic, as I said, to water your garden. So that's a label that's forbidden by the rabbis. It's rabbinically enjoined. So sugi ma'ikot and dabez and dabez. And in case of financial loss, you're allowed to water your garden when necessary, less frequently than usual in the course of the Shemitah year. And you could mow your lawn in the usual fashion because you're doing it not for agricultural reasons, you're doing it for aesthetic reasons. Generally speaking, you're allowed to maintain even a private garden without performing any other labors. And therefore, you don't really have to engage in all the other areas. So we'll get to that. But again, this is by way of introduction. Now, during the Shemitah year, again, in terms of an overall introduction, this shul, based Tfilah Yonah Abram, has taken it upon itself to join forces with Otzah Haaretz. That was the enterprise and handiwork of Hagoyen Razev Chaim Alinowitz Zatzal, the former rabbi of the shul, the founding rabbi of the shul. He was very opposed to the Heta Mechira, so am I. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, he was opposed to the Heta Mechira, and so I don't rely on it. Heta Mechira refers to the fact that the chief rabbin itself, the land of Israel to a Gentile for 2 years. It's not just the 70th, it's also the 8th year, which is in some respects more of a problem than the 7th year, as we'll see. The halachic basis for this sale is that when the land belongs to a Gentile, so then some of the labors that are normally forbidden are permitted. So the Heta Mechira is the subject of a massive machloket, a massive debate among many, many Torah authorities. There were those who accepted it, and especially when it was introduced, literally many decades ago, primarily in order that the agricultural element, the agricultural component, farmers in Eretz Yisrael should not sustain such major losses. And there are many authorities who don't accept it. My Rebbe was opposed to it, based on the Pasuk Chumash, Lo Sechanim, Pasuk in Vaischanim. The Gemara derives many halachas from this Pasuk, Lo Sechanim. And one of them is not to give property in Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew, so not to sell to a non-Jew property in Eretz Yisrael. So those who are opposed to the Heta Mechira subscribe to that position. Those who are in favor, such as Rav Kook Zatzal, feel that there are compelling reasons in terms of the farmers and the like to permit such a Heta Mechira, but it's not, even according to Rav Kook, it's not ideal. That's clear. That's not the subject of my discussion. I'm just mentioning it for your awareness. For the consumer, the Heta Mechira is less problematic with respect to fruit than it is with respect to vegetables, because the trees at which the fruit grew were not planted during the Shemitah year. Beginning of the Shemitah year is not a problem in terms of fruit, because essentially the fruit was essentially emerged earlier. There's more of a problem with vegetables, because vegetables, the kedusha of a vegetable or the status of a vegetable depends on lakita, the time when the vegetable is harvested. And often vegetables are harvested at the very beginning of the Shemitah year after Rosh Hashanah, which of course render them as having the sanctity of Kedusha Shvias. But fruit that is obviously the chanota, the blossoming of the fruit takes place much earlier, is not a problem at the very beginning of the Shemitah year, namely the first few months of Shemitah, there's not an issue. Whatever the case is, Heta Mechir, for those who rely on it, means that it's owned by a non-Jew, so it has no Shemitah sanctity, has no Kedusha Shvias. What we're going to do in this shul is we're going to rely on a number of other items, as I'll mention right now. The most famous of them is the Otsar Bezdin concept. I don't know how to translate it in English. Where essentially a court or the agents of the court, the shlichim of the court, are permitted to harvest the produce growing in the field. And then they're the ones who take over the field of the farmer and essentially distribute whatever emerges free of charge. And the only payment that's exacted is to cover the labor costs. That's the concept of Otsar Bezdin mentioned by the Ramban in Chumash. It's a Tesefta. And it's only permitted to perform labors that are permitted during Shemitah. So usually the yield is smaller than under normal circumstances, because it only allows harvesting and not planting. So only useful for fruit, vegetables that were planted during the sixth year. And this solution meets the highest halachic standards, unquestionably, based on the Chazon Ish and based on Rav Kook. They all subscribe to this concept of Otsar Bezdin. And that solution, however, automatically assumes that whatever you're going to purchase through the Otsar Bezdin has full Shemitah sanctity, has Kedusha Shmias, has to be treated as such. I'll get to that a little bit later. So that's one source, and hopefully that will be a significant source of produce in the course of this coming year. The second source, which is also very well known, this is the whole Gush Katif concept that exists here in this country. Things that are grown through matzah menutak. Matzah menutak refers to, I guess in English you would say, hydroponically, or perhaps detached bedding. I think that's the term that they utilize. That means that if you're planting indoors, many people have plants inside their house under a roof in what's called an atzit sheino nakuv, namely a container or a planter without holes in the bottom. And that's the way they grow all kinds of items, tomatoes and peppers and leafy vegetables and other products. That's Gush Katif. That's what they do. It's grown hydroponically and has, as I said, the approval of all the Dolei Ador. And it meets the highest halachic standards, of course, because it's not connected to the ground. It's not yonic from the ground. It doesn't derive its nourishment from the ground, as in a atzit sheino nakuv, a plant that has no hole on the bottom. Therefore, it's not connected to the earth. We'll discuss that also a little bit. That has no Shemitah sanctity, no Kedusha Shvias. So we've just spoken about two different approaches. One is Otsar Bezdin, that has Kedusha Shvias, has the sanctity of the seventh year. And the second is Matzah Menutak, hydroponics. It's even a question in the poskim, what bracha do you make on it? If it's not deriving its nourishment from the ground, perhaps you should make a shakal, similar to what we make on mushrooms and the like. So I'm going to Rabbi Yosef Zatzal Paskin, no, you make an Adam out in any way, because it's become a source of nourishment for Klal Yisrael, here in Eretz Yisrael, certainly, and even elsewhere. And since it's used as a vegetable, similar to a vegetable, the bracha is Barpi Adam. But the distinction between these two approaches is that the first approach, Otsar Bezdin, as I mentioned, has Kedusha Shvias, and this has no Kedusha Shvias, the second approach, which is Matzah Menutak, detached from the ground. And the third approach, which will be a bit more successful than it was in the past, this is my fourth Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, Ken Yirbu. The first Shemitah, I was congealed. I was stricken with hara and dread. I worked in yeshiva, Yeshivat Or Etzion. I was a ram in Shir Hei in Or Etzion for 2 years. And they relied on the Heta Mechira. I didn't eat vegetables the entire year because I'm against the Heta Mechira. The second Shemitah, I was only half congealed. The third Shemitah, I was a third congealed. And now I think I'm pretty chilled out. In a good way. I've learned a lot more about Shemitah in the course of all these cycles. So the third approach is sixth year produce. Shishit. Certain vegetables can be stored for a long period of time. Otsar Haaretz came here, Rabbi Blum Shlita from Otsar Haaretz, spoke twice in the shul. Maybe some of you were here. maybe not. So he pointed out there's now a new technology that's been developed in the last 6 years since the last Shemitah to preserve vegetables in a more durable kind of fashion, talking about carrots and onions and potatoes and the like. And such produce, of course, has no Shemitah sanctity because it grew during the sixth year. And now they're able to preserve it. Yes. Now it's still the sixth year. The seventh year begins on Rosh Hashanah. Abolein Latova. So we have primarily these three approaches that are going to be utilized and are utilized by Eitz HaAretz. Now, I'll just really, by way of casual mention, note many do not follow this particular approach. Many in the yeshiva world, I can use that terminology. So they essentially utilize vegetables grown by Gentiles. The Gentiles I'm referring to are our cousins. The problem with that I have is that I don't want to give a shekel to them. I never did, and I hope I never will. In some cases, it's not possible. But given what happened this year, it just accentuates this approach that I'm taking. Namely, you may have read what happened in Lod and several other areas where shuls were burnt down by our cousins. And I don't see a basis. I don't see why we should support them in any shape, manner, or fashion unless we have no choice, unless we're constrained to do so. And here we have some alternatives. So just to mention, in vegetables that are grown by Gentiles, so there is a famous machlokes between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Mabit. These are two great Gdol Yisrael. Rabbi Yosef Karo, of course, is the author of the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber. And the question is, do such vegetables have Shemitah sanctity? That's the question. The Beis Yosef said they do not have Shemitah sanctity. They are not treated with Dusha Shvius. The Mabit, who was also a great giant, argued with him and contended they do have Shemitah sanctity. And this is not the machlokes between Bnei Brak and the rest of Eretz Yisrael. In Bnei Brak, they follow the position of the Mabit. They are machmir on even items that are purchased from the Arabs, from non-Jews, from Gentiles. They are machmir. They treat it as having Shemitah sanctity. However, Yushalayim, as it's known, those that are not part of Bnei Brak, hold like the Rabbi Yosef Karo, which is most of Eretz Yisrael, holds like Rabbi Yosef Karo, and they treat such produce as lacking Shemitah sanctity. It's owned by a Gentile. It's purchased from a Gentile. It has no Kedusha Shvius whatsoever. You want to comment? We have no problem. I spoke about that. No. Otsar is going to rely, of course, on 6 year produce, as you indicate correctly, is not a problem at all. 6 year produce is fine. It has no Shemitah sanctity. It's fine. But the question is, do we have enough of it in order to satisfy the consumer for an entire year? I remember that many years ago, Otsar Haaretz began, and initially they ran out of vegetables at a certain point in time. But now they've developed the technology, which hopefully will sustain us for much longer. I can't say how much longer. I'm not a Navi. But that's exactly what they've been working on for the last 6 years. No, everyone agrees it's good. Everyone. No one has any problem with 6 year produce whatsoever. That's not the issue. Nor does anyone have any problem with matzah menutak. That's also fine. Nor does anyone have a problem with outside business. Those are fine. But the problem with those that don't use, that feel the need to use vegetables grown by Gentiles, they feel it's not sufficient. Love my stick. We don't have enough. We have to have recourse to other areas that can help us. So it's clear that priority should be given to buying oats and bezin produce. That's produce that's grown, as I said, either on Jewish farms here in Eretz Yisrael, or we obviously could use the hothouses and this detached bedding, what I call matzah menutak, or 6 year fruit and vegetables, which are, as I said, available to everyone and acceptable according to everyone, and there's no problem whatsoever. Okay, so now I'm going to begin to discuss some of the specifics. Yeah.
Question, I'm a bit confused. So the farmers are not allowed to...
They're not allowed to work the field. So what they do is, the field is hefker. The farmer's field is hefker. That's what he does. However, there's a din called Otsar Bezdin, that the Bezdin is allowed to enter that farmer's field and essentially hire people to do the work of harvesting and the like. And then subsequently, they're not allowed to be paid for. That's right. That's right. Correct. Correct. So that's what I was referring to. So now let me just begin to discuss some of the particulars involved in both of the issues I said I'm going to address. So let's start with gardening during Shemitah. I'm not going to present an exhaustive kind of analysis, but more or less just the basics I'm going to try to share. We mentioned before what areas of malacha are not permitted by Torah law. We said planting, we mentioned pruning, reaping, and gathering. There's in general a question, which is a halachic issue already, namely, does the prohibition apply to the person? What the Torah wants us is not to work the land, and the focus is on the individual. Oh no, the land has to rest. If you read the Pesukim in Chumash, in Bahar, the Torah says, "Bishapsa ha'aret Shabbat Hashem." Sounds like it's a din on the land. On the other hand, there are other Pesukim that tell us, "Sodichol otizra, kamichol otizmar," goes on the person. So we have both of those elements are found. And the reason why this is relevant is because, let's say, planting is done indirectly by causation, by grama. It's not done in a direct kind of way through machinery and the like. Would that be permissible or not? If the issue is the land, then it doesn't make a difference how you do it. The land is not resting. If the issue is the person, then perhaps if it's done indirectly, it would not be a problem. But planting is not permissible. Plowing is not permissible. Pruning is not permissible. These are Isurim mentioned in Chumash. And then, as I mentioned earlier, there are rabbinic labors that are also forbidden. And I listed some of them earlier. I'll mention them again. Watering the ground, unless it's necessary in order to maintain the property that you have. Removing weeds with their roots is also is prohibited. Cutting weeds are not permissible, even without removing their roots. Fertilizing. Sikul avanim. Removing stones in order to prepare the land for planting. And any other such activities, these are activities that the Mishnayos tell us are not permissible. Now, is this going to be long-term damage to the tree? So then, if you're talking about a rabbinic prohibition, there's a room for leniency. But otherwise, these labors are permitted only, as I said, if they're rabbinic in nature, and only b'shas hatzchak, where there's a potential damage to the land. But there are certain labors forbidden by Torah law, other labors forbidden by rabbinic law. So you can't plant at all during the Shemitah year. You can't prune at all during the Shemitah year. What about reaping and gathering? How are we supposed to eat? So the answer is, in small quantities, you're allowed to do so. And even the labors that are also in the Rabbanon rabbinically, I mentioned before, watering and fertilizing and weeding and mowing and spraying pesticides and the like, are permitted only if it's done to preserve the property that which already exists, but not to strengthen, to develop, to enhance that you're not allowed to do. The Gemara clearly makes a distinction between these two approaches. Sometimes a person does something because you want to enhance your property, that's awesome. But if you want to maintain it, that's permissible. And I'll just mention a number of things that are relevant. Watering. You're allowed to water a garden, but only to maintain the garden, not to do anything beyond that. And during the Shemitah year, it's clear if you have a sprinkler system, it should be activated less frequently. And obviously, we live here in rather warm climes. I don't know if you noticed. And therefore, there's no question there's a need for water. No doubt about it. But during the Shemitah year, you do so less than you would on a normal kind of basis. The ideal is, and that's what we did in our home, my Rebbe said to myself, she more than I, we have now this first time a computerized system. We don't have such an extensive garden, a few trees, is what I can see, that she takes care of very religiously and devotedly. So that computer system essentially controls whatever irrigation is going to take place in the Shemitah year. It's programmed that it should be done so, not as normally done in the course of the year, less so periodically, but it's on an ongoing basis on the Sha'on, and therefore being at a clock, that will be, hopefully, Mitzvah Hashem, that will be sufficient to take care of it. Even in terms of fertilizing, let me just mention one or two more things. They apply, and we did this as well, what they call a slow-release kind of fertilizer, and that will suffice for the entire year. Obviously, we did it before the Shemitah, before Rosh Hashanah, and that will take care of that element as well. During the Shemitah year itself, you should not be involved in fertilizing the garden or whatever you have. And sometimes people actually apply fertilizer through the irrigation system. That's what someone told me. That's what they have. That kind of arrangement. Pruning, as I said earlier, should not be performed during the Shemitah year unless there's some disease branch that has to be removed. Or when it's clear that I'm doing the pruning, let's say, because there's a passageway that's blocked. I want to clear that passageway. That's also permissible. That's similar to the halacha of Baltashis. You're not allowed to cut a tree down. It's a pasuk chumash, but let's say the tree is blocking. It's a machzom to an area where people walk. Then you're allowed to go ahead and either move it elsewhere, replant it, or even cut that which is creating a blockage. A similar thing applies over here. Let's say you have hedges. Let's use that example. So if you have hedges that have not filled in, should not be trimmed during the Shemitah year, because trimming will promote growth. And that promotion of growth is not permissible during the Shemitah year. Even if the hedges are full, it's preferable that you trim them before the Shemitah year. You trim them before Rosh Hashanah. And if for some reason you have to trim them, and especially if they interfere with free passage, again, as I said a moment ago, they're being trimmed. But it's clear they're being trimmed not for agricultural reasons, but for aesthetic reasons. And for that matter, as I said, pesticides and weeding, all these are elements that I want you to avoid. And I mentioned earlier, mowing the lawn is permitted during the Shemitah year. But again, if my mowing of the lawn is to stimulate, to enhance the growth of the lawn, that's usur. That's not permissible. Mashenkin, if the mowing of the lawn is done simply for aesthetic purposes, so then you're allowed to go ahead and mow it in the usual fashion, because if you delay and the grass is allowed to grow, then the mowing will then promote the growth of the grass, because maybe sunlight will reach the lower portion of the grass. Uprooting a tree is usur. But again, if it's done to prepare the ground for planting, as opposed to uprooting a tree for other reasons. So these are just general kind of directives relating to the upkeep of a private garden. And I'll mention one more thing, and then perhaps you will address whatever you wish to address. And that is that you see that clearly there's a distinction that one has to be aware of in terms of how one takes care of the garden, the course of the Shemitah year. Maybe I'll mention now one or two other things that just come to my mind. And this is an issue that Rabbi Blum Shlita also addressed. If someone's living in an apartment building, so ideally you should try to arrange with your neighbors. Hopefully all your neighbors are Shomrei Torah Mitzvot. They're all observant, and therefore they're people who are willing to comply with the laws of Shemitah. But sometimes you may have here and there someone who's not so willing to comply with the laws of Shemitah, and you live in the apartment building. So you should try to arrange with the neighbors that only labors that are permitted during the Shemitah year should be performed in that garden, if you're able to do so. If the neighbors don't agree, so then you should tell them that the payment that you give to the Bad Bayit or whatever it may be for joint expenses will only cover, as far as you're concerned, cleaning costs and the like, but not the gardening expenses. And you'll pay more than your neighbors for the cleaning costs. So some people even go so far as to saying before the Shemitah year, they declare in the presence of three people, I'm renouncing my ownership in my portion of the garden. That's what they do, because they don't want to be in any way responsible for any transgression that takes place in the course of Shemitah. You don't have to tell your neighbors about it. You just do it. And automatically, you're no longer will be held responsible. Since I'm at it already, I'll just mention one or two more things, if you don't mind. Namely, potted plants. Many people have asked me about this issue. in the course of the last while. So as I said earlier, this distinction between what the Gemara calls otzitz nakov, a plant that has a hold in it, that is yonik from the ground, that drives its sustenance from Eretz Yisrael, and one that's eno nakov. So if I have an eno nakov, many people have plants in their house. Sometimes you walk into a house, it looks like a garden, which is very beautiful for those who like that kind of ambience. So if you have an otzitz eno nakov inside your house, namely, it's not connected to the ground in any form or fashion, you could do anything. You're allowed to do all kinds of labors. You can plant in your house. It's in your house. It's not connected to the ground. It has nothing to do with the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Even though in general, you should avoid planting. But if I have an otzit shein unokum, so generally, what is a house? People ask me, how do you define a house? A house is something that has a roof, some sort of a structure, and a roof on top. And ideally, it's a structure with walls. And if the potted plant is inside the house and rests on a plate or is not on the ground floor, if you're on the ground floor, then you have a particular issue according to many poskim. But assuming you're not there and assuming it's inside the house, there's no problem with watering it, with fertilizing it, with removing leaves that are unnecessary. And you're allowed to go ahead and move plants around the house. You can move them actually from one place to another because, again, these are not plants that are connected directly to Eretz Yisrael. However, if I have now what's called an otzitz nakuv, namely otzitz nakuv is one that has a hole in the bottom that's connected to Eretz Yisrael, so then you have a problem. Then, of course, all of the above are not permissible because that has, in effect, it's connected to Eretz Yisrael. You can't move it from one place to another. If I have a plant that has, as I mentioned a moment ago, Sheino Nakuv, that you can move because it's not connected. But in Atzitz Nakuv, there's a hole in the ground. Here you have to be very, very careful because, in effect, such an Atzitz is connected to Eretz Yisrael. And I'll mention one or two more things that are relevant probably if you have a windowsill. Many people have plants on windowsills. So a pot that's not inside the house, let's say it's a window box that rests on a kind of outside windowsill. So then you have to handle it in accordance with the guidelines of an atzitz that is nakuv, that's connected to the ground. Or for that matter, I have a window box that sits under a roof, but it's perforated and faces the ground. It means only if I have a window box that sits under a roof and rests, let's say there's a plate underneath, or there's some other kind of item that is a base for that particular atzitz, then you can treat it like a pot that's inside the house, and then you can care for it in the usual fashion because that's not considered to be connected to Eretz Yisrael. But if it's not the case, then you have to be very, very careful regarding the different types of melacha, of labors that you might do with reference to those items. Yeah. Yes, you can water a tree manually, unquestionably. Even when you do it manually, if you don't have a computer system or a sprinkler system, whatever it may be, that's on a clock, you can water it manually, but you should try to do it a bit less frequency than you would normally do in the course of the year. Again, in terms of plant, yeah. People are machmir. The poskim are machmir. It means they're strict regarding that issue. They say if it's on the ground floor, then you should treat it as if it's connected to Eretz Yisrael. On the second floor, on the third floor, there are those who are machmir there also, but not really meikra adin. You don't have to be machmir. But on the ground floor, you should be machmir. That's many, many poskim assume. And I think that's the practice that many people have. Now, again, I just want to stress, since we're still before Shemitah, I'm not going to go into all the dinim of planting fruit trees now and planting vegetables and planting flowers. I'm not going to go into that. Really, should that have been done prior to Rosh Hashanah and way before prior to Rosh Hashanah? I'm not going to go into the specifics of that. But in general, till Rosh Hashanah, you can still water, you can still fertilize, you can still prune, you can still spray herbicides or whatever you're going to do. Before Rosh Hashanah, we still have approximately 2 weeks or so, what I can see. But in the course of the year, as I mentioned, and as you mentioned, watering should be done with less frequency. And pruning, again, is only permitted in the Shemitah year. If you want to remove a branch that's diseased, or you want to clear a passageway, but it has to be very clear, you're not doing it for agricultural reasons. You're doing it purely for aesthetic reasons. And weeding should be avoided, unless you're going to weed because it's going to prevent damage to other plants. Then you'll be allowed to do so. And even so, it's better not to weed, better to cut, better to spray, better to find some other methodology in order to handle that particular issue. In other words, basically, cutting weeds is only permitted if there's an important aesthetic kind of need, as opposed to an agricultural kind of need. And mowing the lawn can be done, as I mentioned. And if I have a potted plant inside my house, under a roof, resting on a plate, not on the ground floor, as you pointed out correctly, can you care for it in the usual way? Watering, fertilizing. But as I said, a window box, whether it's, again, as I mentioned earlier, you have to treat it with the guidelines for maintaining gardens in the course of Shemitah. Okay, this is just a basic overview. Very, very, yes. Weeds, there's a prohibition against weeding in the course of the Shemitah year. So one should not weed, should be avoided, unless if you don't weed, it will damage your entire property. It will cause damage to all the other plants or whatever is growing in your garden. And even so, even when you're allowed to weed, you should try to avoid it if you possibly can. That's a prohibited action in Shemitah mentioned in Mishnah in Masechah Shviyos. Yes. Again, there also you'd be allowed to do so, but it has to be clear that it's done for that reason, not for any agricultural reason at all. Nothing for agricultural reasons can be done, and weeding is one of the prohibitions that's meant explicitly by the post. Okay, I want to turn to the other issue, which is also obviously significant, namely managing kitchens during Shemitah. And as I said earlier, Shemitah produce has special sanctity, special kedusha. I'll just mention Derech Agav. There is a position which is subscribed to by a whole bunch of great poskim that there's a mitzvah to eat Shemitah produce. A mitzvah to eat Shemitah produce. Where else do you find such a mitzvah to eat? Matzah. On Pesach night, there's a mitzvah, Be'er Tochlu Matzos. And some maintain, according to the Ramban, this is a big machlokes, what the proper pshat in the Ramban is, but there are many poskim, very prominent poskim, who felt there's a mitzvah to eat Perosh Rias. Many disagree. But there's no question that eating Shemitah produce is significant and commendable. It's a great achrayis. And that great achrayis means you have to be careful not to destroy Shemitah produce. And that I'm going to discuss right now. The Gemara says, la'achla v'lo la'hefsin. You can't in any way do something which will be destructive of something that has Shemitah sanctity. I'll just give you one or two examples, but I'll go through specifics in a moment. Namely, feeding animals with food that's fit for human consumption. That's absolutely interdicted, prohibited. Or using Shemitah produce in an unusual way. I'll get to the specifics of that in a few moments. And also, if I have a vegetable that grows during Shemitah, and then I pick it during the Shemitah year, it has Shemitah sanctity. It has to be treated as such. Fruit that blossoms, it's called chanata, chet nun tete, in the language of Chazal, during the Shemitah year, has Shemitah sanctity. So generally, fruit that comes to the market right now in Rosh Hashanah for the first few months will not have Shemitah sanctity because the chanata took place in the sixth year. So you won't have an issue. But fruit coming to the market during the eighth year, no question, has Shemitah sanctity. No doubt about it. And that's why you're already doing the eighth year. You have to be concerned about how to treat this fruit, as I'll discuss in a few moments. I'll just mention the esrog, which is relevant. The esrog this year is not a problem at all. Because again, the critical stage for esrog is the chanata, as it is for other fruits. And therefore, that was done already months ago, many months ago. The esrog of the eighth year is a problem. And that, in Yisra Hashem, in the course of next year, we'll speak about. So, in terms of now some of the specifics that relate to how to deal with items in the kitchen, and before I have just one or two more things I wrote down for myself that I just wanted to mention as well. that I believe are significant. I mentioned earlier the three approaches, Otzar Bezdin. Approach number two we mentioned was 60 of produce. And approach number three. Yes. Hydroponics, Gush Katif, thank you. So, as I noted, Otzar Bezdin has Shemitah sanctity. You have to be careful with it. Gush Katif does not have Shemitah sanctity. So this is important when you, what I'm about to discuss now, some of the elements that are going to be involved in taking care of Shemitah produce. Let's start. Shemitah, how shall I call it? Remnants, the shiriot. The remnants of Shemitah should not be thrown into an ordinary garbage can. There are two solutions, really, what one does with shiriot of Shemitah. One is you have a special receptacle. And that receptacle should be designated for food remnants having Shemitah sanctity. And at the end of each day, this is ideal. In a utopian world, in an ideal world, this is what you should do. The bag lining the receptacle should be replaced on an ongoing daily basis. The old bag should be set aside for several days till the food begins to decay, at which time the bag can be thrown into a regular garbage bin. The Shemitah remnants are placed in this bag. The bag is tied up once a number of days has passed and thrown into a regular garbage bin. But one should have a separate receptacle, and the Rebbeim that I had called it a receptacle that's entitled Kedusha Shrius. They don't like the term Pach Shrius. Chas v'shalom, it's not a garbage can. We have garbage cans, which are the Avdil Pachei Zevel. That's not what this is. This is a Kedusha Shrius Kli and should be treated accordingly. So now, if you purchase, as I said, these kind of large bags, and then you take the shiriot. Now we're going to discuss now some of the particulars about leftovers, leftover salad. Whatever's left of a salad can be put into this kli of Kedusha Shvias, designated for the produce. You don't have to separate those portions that don't have Shemitah sanctity. You can't do it on Shabbos anyway. That would be boreh. You'd be in violation of separating solar from ochel, which is an Isur min HaTorah. But as I said, you put it into the receptacle. Someone asked me about soup, leftover soup. Let's say the broth, the vegetable soup made with Shemitah produce has Kedusha Shvias. It has Shemitah sanctity. But the water used to boil the potatoes does not have Shemitah sanctity. Why is that? Because the water is not enhanced by the taste of the potatoes. So it does not have Shemitah sanctity. There are those who are lenient and allow even one to leave the leftover soup out of the refrigerator overnight. And then the soup would be rendered inedible. And once it becomes inedible, so then the soup can be thrown into an ordinary garbage can. But a better solution is to place the leftover soup into a sealed bag and then throw the bag into the regular garbage. I'll give you another example. Let's say I make a cholent with potatoes or with other vegetables that have Shemitah sanctity. Then Shemitah sanctity applies to the entire cholent. The whole cholent becomes invested with Kedusha Shvias, and all the leftovers can be put into a sealed bag and thrown away into a regular garbage. In the case of soup, cholent, and the like, the bags can be thrown right away into the garbage because I imagine the leftovers will become spoiled in a very short period of time, in a few hours. In all cases, you should not mix liquid leftovers with dry leftovers because you don't want to cause the dry leftovers to spoil. Let's speak about peels. You're allowed to take a peel that cannot be eaten. Let's say an empty banana peel. You can take that peel and throw it into a regular garbage can. Again, once you already ate the edible portion of the banana, then the peel itself can be thrown into a regular garbage can. Now, people ask me, what does this mean? I'm eating an apple. Must I eat the apple down to the core? Every single last bit of the apple has to be eaten. So, lechatzila, the answer is yes, during the Shemitah year. Before I discard the pit, so often there may be some shariot left on the pit. So many Paskin, Rabbi Yashiv Zatzal, I saw that he held that if bits of the flesh of the fruit remain attached to the pit, you can be mako, you can discard the pit in an ordinary manner. Lovnitna Torah, the Malachi Asharei. Torah was not given to angels, except for the people in front of me who clearly are angels. But I'm saying that there are people who are machmir, people who are stringent, and will put the pit in the receptacle designed for Shemitah, in that Kedusha Shmias receptacle. So if it's readily available and you are so inclined, you can do so. But let's say it's not available and you're holding by the pit and the little on top of the pit, you can throw directly into the garbage. Lefi Anius Da'ati, according to my humble opinion. Again, I think this is a good chinuch in general, not to waste food. The Shemitah could also give us some other additional dimensions. And I'll just mention one or two more things if you don't mind, just in this regard. Let's say if I have pots and dishes that have remnants of Shemitah produce, which often is the case, you can wash it in ordinary fashion without a problem. We're not talking about large substantive amounts. If they're large and substantive, then you should try to eat it or try to some fine way of taking care of it properly. But lechatchila, once you try one's best to eat and consume as much of the item which has Kedusha Shemitah as possible. I'll mention, someone spoke to me today about one more thing, about compost, that you should not, Shemitah remnants should not, you shouldn't take them and throw them into a compost heap. That's not appropriate. And sometimes the top layer of the compost heap may have already begun to decompose. However, you can cover the pile with a thin layer of sand and newspaper. You want to put the new Shemitah remnants on top. Again, the compost can only be used after the Shemitah year or only during the Shemitah year for preserving that which has to grow. You cannot use it to enhance any kind of agricultural growth. But one last thing I mentioned before you speak, and that is that if I have leftovers that will not be eaten by people, so that may be given to animals. Assuming that's the common practice, I'm not a mumcha on these matters. I don't have expertise in these matters. But certainly you should not take those leftovers and put it directly into the animal's mouth, because these are leftovers that are primarily for human consumption, not for animal consumption. And that's diminishing the item's ultimate use, which is not appropriate. La'achla, the Torah said, eat it. Who's supposed to eat it? Human beings. We're supposed to eat it. And not to go ahead and be mafsid, cause a loss by giving it to an animal. I don't think you'll give a steak to an animal. I don't think you'll give a nice plum tomato to an animal. So that's inappropriate. That's not permissible. So essentially, what am I defining for you? I'm defining for you the obligation to divert Shemitah produce from its ordinary use and somehow attempt to convert it elsewhere. And maybe I should also mention, again, I didn't forget, you'll be there in a moment, maybe two or three other things that come to my head. Let's talk about bishul. Let's talk about cooking. You're allowed to cook any fruit or vegetable that's ordinarily cooked. But let's say someone asked me, can I cook watermelon if it has Shemitah sanctity? I have yet to meet the person who eats cooked watermelon. Maybe it exists. Today, anything goes. At one time, I remember, whoever heard of carrot juice? Today, what are you talking about? If you don't eat carrot juice, you're not with it. You're lacking. Culturally, you're a prehistoric man. I'm just being a little cute. Squeezing, which is the issue of shchita, you're allowed to squeeze juice from fruit that's normally used in that matter. However, make sure you squeeze it as thoroughly as possible. You want to minimize waste. You don't want to cause any kind of loss to the fruit, because that would be a violation. There's someone ahead of you. There's a line here. Mashing. Let's use that another example. There's no problem with mashing Shemitah produce. Let's say you use a fork to mash or use a grater. But let's say I want to go ahead and I want to take Shemitah produce and put it into a blender or creating some sort of a liquid paste. Again, it should be restricted to foods that are normally prepared in that manner. If it's not prepared in that manner, you should not do so. That's a violation of this din, using Shemitah produce inappropriately. I'm not talking about mashing food for an infant. That's obviously appropriate. That's what's done. But I'm talking about if you will not mash that food for an adult, you should not do so. That would be a violation of the laws of Shemitah. It would not be permissible. Yeah. Correct. Because once you've eaten the edible portion of the banana, the peel itself is not roi l'achila. Masheino roi l'achila, ein b'zeh shum b'ayah shelach l'lo l'hefsid. There's no problem. Now, maybe it may not apply to all. There are people who eat orange peels. I've seen it. I was told that orange peels can be utilized in a number of very creative kind of ways. I don't want to get into the details. I'm involved in a young man's yeshiva for many, many years. Wow. They are creative beyond creative. I'm talking about with all different types of peels. I won't get into details here. It might cause you to lose your appetite for the next few days. I'm talking about orange peels. The question is, does anyone in this room, you are outstanding women and clearly wholesome, who do things, I imagine, in a normal fashion. Anyone here uses orange peels? Exactly. Marmalade, and not just marmalade, other things. So orange peels I would have a problem with. I don't think it should be disposed like banana peels. As you mentioned, this issue, I think it's a distinction. Now the question is we have to now, what about apple peels? Do people use the apple? Use that also. Anything else that you would think of? Any other kind of items?
Beet peels.
Also. Okay, so you have to make distinctions here. I use banana as an example because that's clear to me that no one eats a banana peel.
Yeah, but beets have a bit of the fruit of the vegetable on it. It's not like it's a separate vegetable.
So you're saying it's different than the banana?
Yeah.
Okay, you have to, that I don't have such expertise as you do. But again, the rule of thumb is that something that would not ordinarily be used in this kind of fashion, it is not permissible. You have to be very careful with Shemitah produce and with the Shemitah sanctity. By the way, I should mention also that this is also discussed actually in Halacha. The Gemara actually mentions, I don't know, again, can I go ahead? Someone asked me about preparing medicine from Shemitah produce. The Gemara says, l'ochla v'lo l'refuah. Again, it has to be used for eating purposes as opposed to using it for medicine. But sometimes they prepare medicine from Shemitah produce. It can very well happen. It's not awesome. Someone asked me about removing a stain with a lemon that has Shemitah sanctity. He told me that's what he does. I told him, I generally go to professional as opposed to using lemons. But he asked me, can I do so? Leviathan's idea, it's awesome. Gemara says, la'achla, v'lo l'krisa. You can't use it for laundering. And now would it be applicable to use a lemon to remove a stain? It would not be appropriate. Let me just mention now that I'm at it. Mitoch tochidei, havdolah wine. When you're using Shemitah wine, you shouldn't fill the cup over the brim. The Gemara says in general, that kamashaya mikdusha la'avdalta, you're supposed to fill the cup to the top and it should spill over. That's a simen bracha. It's a gemara and avit sochim. That should not be done on Shemitah because then you're wasting the wine that spills out. You don't have to do that. Unless someone's going to drink the wine that spills onto the plate. If you get someone to do that, that's fine. No problem at all. Or people are knowing to extinguish the Avdolah candle with the Shemitah wine or with the wine. That's not permissible. Or Leil HaSeder, when you go through the Tzach Hadash B'Achab and you're casting out drops of wine when you're enumerating the 10 plagues, the Esar Makos, not permissible. Or, now they're at it, you may as well want to roll already. Some people, I'm not like that, to take the wine and dab it in your eyes. Not during Shemitah. So, I suggested to my better half, I don't use wine in general. I use grape juice. The only time I drink wine is twice a year on Leil HaSeder, where I drink what they call Yayin Kal, which many Balabatim told me is not Yayin. They call it Reuter Wasser, red water, at best. I don't think it's red water. I even went up. I went from 3.4 to 3.7. Wow. Mind-boggling. So only on Leil HaSeder I drink that, four kosos. And also on Purim, I drink more than what I'm accustomed to drink, which is about 1 milliliter. I go to sleep, and I'm a kaimad lo yoda, and that's it. I am a teetotaler. I don't drink wine. I'm not into alcohol. It doesn't talk to me, doesn't speak to me, interferes with my seichel, which I have to have 24/7 operating. So I'm not into that. But so I mentioned to my wife Shlita that we use the whole year kedem made in Chutz Laaretz. There's no problem. I can spill it over. I can dab it. I can do whatever I wish. I have to like kedem grape juice. I'll give you one other example now that comes to my mind, just if you don't mind, since I'm at it. I'm on a roll already on this. Shemitah oil. Can I light Nerot Shabbat with oil that has Shemitah sanctity? And the answer is yes. The Gemara said that Shemitah is supposed to be used l'achila, l'shtia, l'sicha, l'hadakat Nerot. The only question is, this Rabbi Bloom raised this question, but I'm not going to discuss it right now, but I can use it for Nerot Shabbat. By the way, Mishloach Manot, someone asked me about that. I was taken aback. Can I say Mishloach Manot with items that, in effect, have Shemitah sanctity? I told him not to. Make sure that you send Mishloach Manot with items that don't have any Shemitah sanctity. Okay, these are some of the items that just come to my head relating to, so just summarizing, Shemitah leftovers. Once you try to finish all the Shemitah produce on one's plate because of the Kedusha of Shemitah, and I really honestly think that this could be used as a tool of chinuch for young children not to waste food and perhaps to utilize it to the fullest extent. And as I mentioned, you could throw it once it's totally without any ability to eat and the like. So then you should set aside, as I said initially, a Kedusha receptacle, Kedusha Shviyas, and label it as such, line it with the bag, put all Shemitah leftovers into that container. At the end of the day, you can tie the bag and throw it into the garbage, or some people will be mapped to keep it for several days before they discard it, because El Dvarim Shein Lam Shir, as the Mishnah says. I don't think there's any amount of time. The truth is, I am involved with young men, and if you think they would eat any leftover that's left over for 1 minute, the pinuk is beyond belief. That's, I always say, they're also meisa nefesh. When we order pizza and they have to wait 5 minutes, they say that's meisa nefesh. So this for them would also be meisa nefesh. But we're going to eat something that was left over, that's a remnant. It's left over for 3-4 minutes. Not for us. I think we're a bit more careful related to how we use food items. I would imagine it would be a day or two. Probably in a day or two, it would already no longer be edible or usable, and then you can put it into the garbage can.
All this is not food.
That's right. That's why people prefer Yavul Nochri. Some very fine Jews, let's just leave it at that. Let's not get into ideology. Whom I've spoken to about this told me this is the reason why they don't want to do this. It's too complicated. I don't think it's complicated at all. On the contrary, it's an opportunity to be mechanich our children what Shemitah is all about, what Kedusha Shviyas is all about. No, I can't deal with the receptacles and this and that and all that. And I have young children. How are they going to handle it? You'll be mechanich them. That's what chinuch is all about. I don't get it. On the contrary, I see this as a golden opportunity to be mechanech people of all ages. But they don't agree with me, as you indicated, and therefore they take a different tack. And I'm troubled by that tack because I don't want to support them. I don't want them to have money that can throw more projectiles at me and more rockets. I feel that's absolutely untenable, unconscionable. I felt this way since I came to Eretz Yisrael. I haven't changed my position one iota. There are people who do that. Must one be machmir? Once you're, shall we say, leaving it over, I'm not going to use it. Is there a difference between this item and the other item? Would you, let's say, with reference to one item, maybe you would still use the item, even though it's sort of left over, and the other item maybe you would not use. How could you mix the two? If you can. I said, you're not required to do it. But if you wish to do that, this young woman who's my Rebbe, so she's very machmir, Baruch Hashem. No, not necessary. Yeah. Yeah.
So if the liquid is on the base of the vegetable or the
right. It takes on Kedusha Shvi'as. I again, you want an example of the potato. What? Does not. Because only if it's going to enhance the item, the fact that it's together, again, cholent and potatoes, whatever other vegetables that you put in. I once went to someone's home and they put bananas in the cholent base in there. So I like bananas, but not in the cholent. And then, so I ate it because I was a guest in Chutz Laretz. And then they said, oh, we see you like it so much. They gave me a second heap of it. This guy was even more than the first. Boy, oh boy. I ate the second heap as well. I don't know how. It was almost subhuman. Yeah. Yes, you can. Yes. Okay. I want to maybe this, the second issue of the kitchen is really a very significant issue. But again, I just want to stress that you're allowed to cook Shemitah produce if it's regularly cooked. You have to use it in its ideal form and fashion. And people ask me now, because I mentioned earlier the carrot juice. So there's someone, I have young men in my yeshiva, they're into all these juices, carrot juice. And I discussed the other day with a young man. He told me he drinks watermelon juice. Wow. He juices everything. But I don't think he represents the norm, according to my humble opinion. So only that which is normally squeezed or normally mashed. Means the role of the kitchen during Shemitah consists of the privilege of eating Shemitah produce, the attempt to eliminate all leftovers and putting them in the bag before they're thrown into the garbage. And as I mentioned, even though some of this may not necessarily be, to our minds, so rationally undergirded, but at the end of the day, the whole concept of Shemitah is to declare to every single one of our minute actions that everything belongs to Hashem, and He's the Bailin, He's the owner. We're only here as tenants at best, and it's such a beautiful concept. Once every 7 years, there's no reason why we should not jump on board and utilize the opportunity to observe these laws of Shemitah. Okay, what I presented to you was a very, very general overview. And if you have particular questions, you can ask me, you can call me. I'm generally available. People who call me, I answer them, usually in the course of the day, the same day. So I have no problem with that. It's fine. Now, Otzar Haaretz, Dr. Elio Gurman, has become the address in this shul for, he's really into it. And also very excited about it as well. And so he's trying to create a manui with Otzar Haaretz. Now, I really cannot weigh in on it because I'm not directly involved. He is directly involved. We'd like to speak to him about. He can tell you all the particulars. And some people are doing it. They're taking a kind of, okay, let's do it for a month or so because we want to see if it's going to work. And others are willing to take the plunge and do it for a more extended period of time. He'll discuss that with you if you speak to him about it. I can't tell you how to go about doing it. I honestly hope and pray that it will work. I'm davening to Hashem that's going to work and be more effective than the last Shemitah. I know what happened last Shemitah. I know what happened to Shemitah prior to that. I know what prior to that. And this is number four. So it's already Chazokah. So I would hope and pray that it will be a better situation. In speaking to this Rabbi Bloom from Otsa Aretz, I spoke to him already a number of times. So he feels that now much more is in place. What they did was last time they ran it themselves. They're not a food cooperative. That's not their area of specialty. Now they gave it over to a food cooperative. And what I understand now, minimally Best is involved and they're going to be involved. They've been approached already many times. There may be one or two other stores that also may have this accessibility in terms of Otsa Aretz. It has yet to be concretized, but he, Dr. German, is on top of everything in terms of this issue. So I suggest those of you who have specific questions, you can talk to him and ask him. Yeah.